every year before we ran some candidates. This year we'll be running more. We hope to get them all CEP qualified for anybody who does step forward and decides to run. So we've been making progress. We hope to continue to make progress and eventually elect someone.
Yeah, and I want to ask about that. People sometimes forget about that, about Republican and Democratic and other party politics, that people sometimes forget the first role of a party, correct, is to give you a choice at Election Day. It's actually run people for office. For all the noise we hear, platforms, registrations, the idea in the democracy is we're supposed to be able to vote for people, correct? So the Republican Party, you're saying one of your first goals now, because I think you had, tell me if I'm wrong, about four people running for Alder last time a year ago out of about 34.
Yes, four.
And you try to get, and you finally had people running for state rep in a lot of the districts. It's been a while for a mayor candidate, right?
Yeah, that was disappointing. We would have liked to run a mayoral candidate last year. Unfortunately, we made the decision not to. I would have preferred running one, only because we offer such a stark contrast from the Democrats. So it could have been an interesting debate.
Let me ask you about that, John. You say you're a stark contrast from the Democrats. In the context of New Haven, rather than the mess in Washington, what does it mean to be a Republican as opposed to a Democrat? What's different about the way
you guys view this? There's really only a few main points that make someone a Republican over a Democrat. I mean, we believe in God, we're pro-life, we're pro-Constitution, and we're for less government and less taxes. So if you're for those main tenets of Republicanism, you're basically a Republican. The Democrats in New Haven have had free reign over New Haven for the past, 50, 60, 70 years.
Let's see, 1953 was the last time, '51 was the last mayoral election won by a Republican, William Celentano. However, Republicans were quite influential on the Board of Alders, I would say, until about a decade ago. And they can be again. Yeah,
we need to bring that back. I mean, for the city to work for everyone, everyone has to have a voice. And to solve problems, you need discourse and opposing views to come to solutions that work for everyone. So eventually, that's where we want to get to. I mean, Justin has an uphill battle as mayor. I wish him well. He's a tremendously intelligent man, nice guy, met him in person. He's willing to cross the aisle and work with us. So we wish him all the luck in the world. However, we're hoping to have someone run against him in 2 years.
Well, I would say that until the modern political moment, that was considered respect. People in different parties did respect each other. They said, we're all citizens. We want you to do well, and we want to present alternatives and run for office, not because it's personal, but because there are different ideas about how to run the place and competition is good.
We're all New Haveners. We all live together. There's no reason to disrespect anyone. At the end of the day, Republican, Democrat, it's going to be your neighbor, your doctor, your lawyer, your teacher, your newspaper reporter. So I mean, we all live here together. So we can't get partisan politics affect us to the point where we're going to hate each other. We're going to disagree on certain things, but we all want to get to a successful New Haven that works for everyone. That's the primary goal for Democrats and Republicans.
And we're talking about that on Dateline New Haven. WNHH-FM, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed on newhavenindependent.org. We're talking to the new Republican town chair, John Carlson of City Point. He's been around the block, active in City Point for decades, public school teacher, and now he's taking his hand at one of the big and most important challenges in our political life, which is to revive the second political party in town, the Republicans, offer some alternatives so that on Election Day, if we're ever allowed out of our houses again, we have other people to vote for besides just one party. John, historically, the Republican Party was originally the pro-choice party. It was Republicans who went to court for abortion rights. Now, pretty much, it's become pro-life, although I would argue that in each party, there are people who feel different ways. I was interested that when you were talking about what Republicans stand for in New Haven is believe in God, pro-life, pro-Constitution, less government, and government spending and taxes. Why did you include pro-life? Is that a local issue? Is that true that everyone in the party?
That's not a major local issue, but that is just one that we believe.
But I mean, like, are there people who can be pro-life when they run for office? Is that a concern?
Not a major concern, New Haven, because there's, I mean, there's little to nothing that can actually be done on that issue. So our main issues in New Haven are basically quality, and we also want to keep taxes low. At least not, if we can't lower them, at least not, let's not raise them any more than they already have. New Haven's becoming unaffordable for
And I actually want to go deeper with you on the tax question in the middle. I just want to finish in a minute. I want to finish the social issue question. The Green Party years ago, which is a left-wing party, actually a version earlier than the one we have now, when they actually had people running for office, they had two alders elected. I don't know if you remember this, 2001. A couple of them served a couple terms. And as with the Republicans, if you have just a couple, you're very influential because you're an alternative voice. You're privy to all the committees. And they had a woman named Joyce Chen in the Dwight neighborhood, Ward 2, who was very influential, led neighbors to stop plans that weren't good for the neighborhood. And she was in the left-wing Green Party and was deeply pro-life and anti-gay rights because she was an evangelical Christian. So it is interesting to me how political parties, when they have a set of values, it's kind of hard to find human beings who can agree with 100% of any party's platform. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. Very difficult. So you're going to have a range. And you're not going to agree with every single thing. So if there were 100 items, you're not going to agree with all 100. But if you say you agreed with 70 of them, then you would say you have to lean that way.
And Jim Carlson says, hi to you, John. I would argue that when I've watched Republicans in New Haven, I would feel that one consistent view is that the government is too big and we can't afford to raise taxes anymore. Do you think that's a fair way to distinguish?
I agree.
Now, that's a tough question, as you know, because you alluded to it before. You said, John, let's at least not raise them more, because the dilemma is New Haven doesn't get the print money. 60% of our property now is off the tax rolls. So I think most people agree, even people like me who believe the federal government should tax more, right? Just to be put that on the table. We know in the New Haven you can't really, because there's a point at which people just can't pay property taxes anymore, and then you don't collect any more money. And so everyone's been trying to figure out, how do we avoid taxing more? We got to have cops. We got to have, we know that we don't want fat or, you know, extra bureaucratic positions. After years of cuts, it's a little hard to identify a lot of positions specifically that we wouldn't have. So I actually love this question. I think it's a really important question. Do you see things New Haven government is doing that maybe we should just say we'd like to do it in a perfect world, but we can't?
Well, I think you'd have to actually just take every New Haven department and go line by line through their budget. And each department would have to look and see where they could save money, where they can make cuts, and see if maybe some services overlap from one department to another. Certainly, there's got to be overspending across the board. There has to be positions that aren't needed and aren't necessary. But to point out one particular one, I don't want to make any enemies this morning.
It's okay. It's COVID-19. Everyone's a man, so we're going to have our rifles going out in the wilderness. Yeah.
But, yeah, I would say the New Haven government is too big and should do a better job in looking for cuts, looking for ways to save money across the board.
Can you give me an example?
Well, I mean, the school system. School system is very top-heavy. You have a lot of administrators. You have the superintendent, the last superintendent, who hired all sorts of people. That's a lot of money that could be saved. I mean, when you're talking about if you have a associate principal or vice principal or a principal that you don't need, they're making well over $100,000. That money could be used to hire multiple aides and have actually people working in the classroom to help kids who are behind in reading and math, and bring them up to grade levels. So having aides in the classroom is, to me, a far more better way of spending money than having an extra principal or an extra vice principal, especially if you don't need one. Certain school sizes, you don't need two principals. So that would be one way the education system could save money.
One question I've always had was whether we could have fewer schools. I'm told sometimes that doesn't save money because, like, sometimes there's not enough capacity because, you know, you run fewer school buildings. It's hard. You got to get in there and you're right until you're in there. So Justin Ellicker got elected. He asked every department to give him 10% version of cuts, 30% version of cuts. And I think his second budget, he might have more time to deal with that. Because then when you get in the weeds, and I'm sorry if I'm getting too much in the weeds, when you lay off people, you don't get most of the savings for a year because they have severance, the union can test stuff, and people bump. So I'm going to show you what an old fart I am. In 1980, I was covering when they were trying to cut the budget in New Haven. And because of bumping to avoid a tax increase, they laid off the Spanish-speaking principal. I mean, librarian. We used to have one in New Haven. Mm-hmm. And they bumped someone into it who couldn't speak Spanish. And, you know, it's just real tricky when you get in the weeds. You know, municipal government sometimes, you know, ideological views are important, but just like nuts and bolts to get it done. Like, I'm thinking cops. Like, I'm thinking there's got to be a challenge out there to figure out whole parts of government that are actually good to do, but we might have to say we can't do them anymore. I actually think that might be a great challenge for the Republican Party to say, in addition to not wanting fat and waste, and, you know, very good point you made, you know, associate principal that's put into AIDS. I wonder if as a society we're going to say government can't do certain things. Like, do we need a small business development person in government? Small businesses add to our tax base. It's a great thing to do. Nobody's against building a small business. Would we say there already is an economic development administration that does that? Would we say we want people who already do other kinds of business development to work twice as much? Although that might burn them out and they won't do it as well. Or would we say sometimes those positions are grant funded, so that doesn't save us money anyway? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
I missed about half of what you said. You were going in and you froze there on me for a second. But
I was saying
the answer to what I think you asked was, I think business a lot of times is better left in the hands of businessmen. So the job of government really isn't to grow business, but to foster a climate where you attract businesses and you get businesses to want to come and stay and grow and thrive in New Haven. So I don't think we've done on a state level. As you can see, economically, Connecticut's lagging far behind in the recovery of the rest of the United States. And that's because of what we've done locally. So part of what Connecticut and New Haven could do is just lower taxes, make it easier for businesses to thrive. And no, we don't need a business czar in the government. It was just another position that we're paying, wasting tax dollars. If we do, you know, things that actually attract businesses, we will get businesses.
I guess one question is, do we attract businesses by offering them tax incentives and help with the bureaucracy? Or do we help them by having safe streets and good schools and a well-run government so they feel they can succeed in working here?
Well, it would have to be a combination. So you don't want to just go tax incentives because you want to make it, you don't want to give freebies away to businesses, especially if you don't have to. Welfare for business. I believe in strong businesses survive. That's capital. So, but if we have safe streets, safe schools, educated population, lower taxes, businesses will come. We won't have to pay any more incentives, but want to be in Connecticut geographically. We're in a great location with New York, Boston. We're right in the middle of everything. We have 91, 95. So we have Yale. So we're attractive. We have things to attract businesses. We just haven't, with the heavy tax base, we haven't attracted them. I mean, if you go back, I go back to 1968 and when I was born, New Haven was filled. There were factories everywhere. And now a lot of those factories are being transformed into apartment buildings. And originally, a lot of them left to move down south. And why did they move down south? They moved down south for lower taxes and lower wages. And then after that, they ended up even moving, relocating to other countries. So if we had done a better job back then of keeping taxes low, we could have certainly saved a lot of businesses.
And we're talking about John Carlson. He's a person you're going to hear more from in the next 2 years and you might even see him if we're allowed out of our houses at any point. He's on WNHHFM's Dateline New Haven. He's the new Republican town chair, elected last Thursday, unopposed, unanimous, and he's got plans for rebuilding the Republican Party. So, John, you talked about recruiting more candidates. What else are you thinking of doing to build up the Republican brand in New Haven?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. So the different plan than my predecessors, Jonathan Warren, actually, I gotta give him credit. He's the reason I joined the New Haven RTC to begin with. He did a great job of bringing us back. Jeff Weiss, also fantastic job. Jeff liked to focus on candidates. And I want to focus on actually growing the party. So registering voters, getting people involved in the town committee, getting the Republican name out there. We haven't done a good job of that at all over, and not, it's not the past few years. We're talking 10, 20, 30 years. Republicans, when I do door knock, they're ecstatic to see me. And their first question is, where have you been? We've been waiting for you. So we have to do a better job of reaching out, door knocking, calling, mailing, letting people know we exist. A lot of people don't even know that New Haven Republicans are even a thing. They're shocked to even hear that we're here. You know, oh, you're a New Haven Republican. Like, they'd be less surprised by seeing a unicorn for some, in some cases.
Well, you know, you mentioned door knocking, and that has a mythic image in American politics because it's often seen as the way you get any political movement or party successful. That's not. There are other things, too. There's online. Your predecessor, Jeff Weiss, did a great job getting candidates to qualify for the Citizens Election Program when they were for state office. But, you know, when you look at how power shifted in New Haven in the last 10 years, it was the Unite Here unions at Yale who got control of the Board of Alders. And they did it. They always talk about being on the doors, which is something they learn in unions. And their candidates came from unions, and they just knocked on so many doors, their knuckles were raw. And they talked to people face to face. Do you still have that view in 2020 that that's still the fundamental way you build a party and build a movement?
There's many ways. That's one of them. But it's one that we haven't done. We haven't been seen. We haven't door knocked. So people haven't seen us. I think a lot of people tend to think Republicans are anti-union. We're not anti-union. We're anti being forced to join a union. And we're anti having a board of alders that's controlled by literally one union. So really, who controls New Haven? Is it a union or is it New Haven? There's far too many alders from the same union elected to the board of alders in New Haven. So I don't like to see that. Do I like to see them succeed? Yes. I like to see people have good jobs, good wages. Yes. But I don't like to see complete a board of, no one would ever want to see a board of alders controlled by all the same union. That wouldn't work for anybody. That would only work for that union. Certainly won't work for the New Haven taxpayer. But door knocking is big. Social media, we're going to get out, and phone calling and meeting people in person. Like I said, people are literally surprised when they hear from us. They haven't heard from us. A lot of things we've gotten away from. You know, several years ago on Facebook, probably before Jonathan Warren took over, I had to join the West Haven Republicans on Facebook because there wasn't a New Haven Republican Facebook page. So we've changed that. We're New Haven Republicans on Facebook. We're on Twitter, New Haven GOP. We'll hopefully be running Instagram very soon and any other social media that we can get. So, and we're going to utilize you. I mean, as you know, New Haven needs two parties. It's imperative New Haven has a functioning Republican Party just for the welfare of New Haven. And you're going to be a big part of that. We're going to utilize your show. We'll be on your show. Our candidates will be on your show. Our members will be on your show. We look forward to interviewing with you, Skyping, coming on, however, you know, whatever means we have to do in this new age of coronavirus. everyone needs to stay safe, but we still need to get the word out there and talk to people.
And the door is open to the Republican Party.
Jeff kind of avoided you. I don't know if that was a good strategy or not. I'm going to welcome you with open arms, and we're going to run from here. I mean, publicity is good publicity, as far as I'm concerned.
And welcoming you with open arms, we're welcoming John Carlson, the new Republican town chair in New Haven, has a lot of plans afoot, including door knocking. You're going to see them at your door, pushing the idea that New Haven needs two parties, that the Republican Party is back, and they got a lot of work to do. Now, John, you do have experience door knocking. We followed your previous campaigns for Alder in the City Point neighborhood, and you got a lot of positive response, and not just when you ran for office. You worked in some local campaigns. You were active on See Click Fix. How long have you lived in the City Point neighborhood?
I am 51, so I'll be 52 later this year. Basically been in the same house my entire life, except for 2 years that I lived in West Haven.
So you grew up in that house?
I grew up in this house, this neighborhood. I used to go to St. Peter's, the Albie Booth Boys Club, and Betts Little League. I was a paper boy growing up. So, I mean, my roots are here. Two of my siblings are still here. One's in Westville, one's in East Shore. My nephew's here, one of them. So I have roots in New Haven. I don't plan on leaving New Haven. I love New Haven. Great town, great location. We just need to improve our government.
And tell me about what it was like to grow up in City Point. You talked about the Albie Booth Boys Club. You talked about delivering the paper. What was the neighborhood like then, and what's it like now?
In some respects, it's a lot different. Well, partially because I was a newspaper boy, and I was involved. My family was involved in St. Peter's Church, and I went to the Boys Club, Little League, and I was a paper boy. Basically, you knew everyone within a 5-block radius. So if you did something wrong, of course, this was the 70s and 80s, the neighbor would yell at you, first of all. And then if you went home and, you know, told your mother that, you know, Mr. Smith yelled at you, it wouldn't be, you know, Mr. Smith wouldn't be in trouble. It would be, you know, why was Mr. Smith yelling at you? What did you do wrong? So you'd get in trouble from the neighbor and from your parents. There was a lot more home ownership back then, I think. I want to say employment was probably higher. The difference now on my street in particular, we're at about 25% home ownership. Mm. And when I go back to as a child, we were probably around 75% home ownership. And even the multifamilies had relatives on different floors.
So did your neighbors walk to the Seamless Rubber plant to work?
I would say they did, but it was closed by the time I remember. So as a kid, we actually played in the Seamless abandoned factory.
Wow. And John, what newspaper did you deliver?
What's that?
What newspaper did you deliver?
The New Haven Register. Okay. And even the Journal Courier, I believe.
And how old were you
back then?
How old were you?
Oh, Jesus. I must have started that at 9, 10 years old.
And because I was a paper boy, I'm about close to a decade older than you. In my day, you had to knock on people's doors once a week to get paid.
Like with money, with the little tickets.
Uh-huh. So what did you learn about door knocking from that? Anything you learned about when you knock on people's doors, how do you talk to them or how do you present yourself?
That's a good question. One is to read your audience. So if it's a bad time, it's a bad time. Thank them. Apologize for disturbing them and move on. Especially as a candidate. As a paper boy, you might have to say, listen, I need the payment. You can be in a bad
spot. The papers.
What's that?
When they dropped off the paper, did anyone ever steal them before you got them?
No.
Because where I grew up, I was in White Plains. Some people used to sometimes just, I guess it was more harassing than for money. People would sometimes take the bundles and take them away.
No, that never happened to me.
That was a nicer time. So City Point now, when you've knocked on doors, are some of those the same doors you knocked on to collect the papers in your kid, or is too much time allowed?
A few of them are. A few of them are. There's several families that have been here for ages and aren't going anywhere. But every year, there's, you know, less and less. You know, recently, last month, Christine Sainsbury passed away.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
She was very active in the community.
She was organizing. John, can you name me a person or a family whose door you knocked on as a kid and then as a candidate, and what it was like to reemerge on that setting?
Well, it's that's a little stranger because you actually know the person, so yeah. It's probably not fair to do.
Okay, no problem.
It's a different approach when you're dealing with someone you know and someone you grew up with. But there's plenty of families still around. Not like I said, more and more are gone every year, but there's still a lot. There's still a lot here.
John, what are the big issues now in City Point? You mentioned home ownership going from maybe 75% to 25%. You're doing ballpark estimates. In terms of the Republican Party addressing the needs of your neighbors, in addition to lower taxes, are there City Point specific issues that need addressing?
Oh, well, yeah, our streets, our potholes, and our sidewalks are just horrendous. There's literally sidewalks. If you go to the corner of 5th Street in Greenwich, there's literally grass sidewalk that has to be, it literally has to be mowed because there's that many weeds and grass growing where the sidewalk was. So a big thing is our infrastructure, we need potholes fixed, we need the streets repaved, and we need the sidewalks redone. Ambetts Little League was closed 3 years, and our Morrison a couple years ago will be entering our third year as soon as coronavirus fears subside and we deem it necessary to safe to play. But we brought that back. We're on Facebook. You can find us, Hill Regional Baseball. If anybody's interested in sponsoring a team or signing up their kid, we originally did T-ball for the first 2 years. This year we're looking to do Little League, so we're going to add and grow up to 8, 9, and 10-year-olds. Of course,
after who we are, to play. Is this a government thing or a neighborhood thing? What is the Little League?
It's Hill Regional Baseball. It's at the old Ambetts site in City Point at Bayview Park, across from Sound School. So, listen, everyone from, I would say, Columbus Street South as a kid in the 60s, 70s, 80s played at Ambetts Baseball. It was a thriving league. It started at Little League and it had a major league. So it had 8, 9, 10-year-olds and 11 to 12-year-olds. And then at 13, you were too old. You exited out into Babe Ruth or the Pony League. But it was run back then very well, was thriving. There was probably at least a dozen teams. And then for whatever reason, you know, it got let go and it closed down. And it was just sitting there. So, I mean, it's people in the neighborhood need things for their kids to do. So we brought it back. That's another
who
item.
Who are we?
What's that?
Who brought it back? You and who else?
Mark Morrison. My neighbor on Howard Avenue. It was interesting because we actually met by chance. We were at a Hill South Development community meeting, and he was there to say that he was looking for support to reopen the Little League. And I was also there to look for support to reopen the Little League. So it was a marriage made in heaven, if you will. So I tapped him. I said, listen, we got to get together because we have the same plans. There was actually another man who wanted to get involved, but he ended up stepping aside, and he does a little travel team in the Hill.
That's great. How do people get involved? How do they help you do that? Go to the Facebook page?
How did the Hill South?
How can our readers help you get the Little League going again?
You froze up.
How can our readers help you get the Little League going? How can they support that? Go to the Facebook page.
Like us and share us on Facebook, Hill Regional Baseball. They own a business and they'd like to sponsor a team. They can contact us through there or email us. And if they want to sponsor a kid, or if they have a kid that would be interested in playing, they can reach out and they can sponsor a kid. But right now we're on hold because obviously coronavirus. We don't want to, you know, kids aren't going to school. They're not going to be playing baseball.
All right. Well, luckily, hopefully we'll be back to that soon. John, before I let you go, new Republican town chair, I want to ask you about the coronavirus and teaching. You've been a teacher in the Bridgeport Public Schools for how long, and what do you teach?
This is my 20th year. I'm in fourth grade. I've taught fifth and sixth as well. I teach all subjects. I was actually in contact with parents this morning, giving assignments to kids online for the majority of who have internet access. And there'll be packets going home through the city of Bridgeport on Monday morning. Great job.
How are you feeling about that? It looks like it's going to be the rest of the school year, I think, correct? How are you settling for that? How is it going to work?
But, I mean, we have to do what we have to do. You know, coronavirus, listen, follow the CDC guidelines, listen to your doctor, stay safe, avoid crowds, do what you, I mean, listen, in the end, all of this is just a minor inconvenience. Just stay safe. Do what they ask you to do, and stay safe and healthy, because you don't want to catch it. I mean, you don't want to catch it. So, you know, people are complaining about, you know, toilet paper, of all things.
That was weird.
But, I mean, it's the best of a bad situation. No one's going to.
All right. Well, you're doing what you have to do. I want to really thank you, John Carlson, for coming on the air today in WNHH's Dateline New Haven. I love hearing about your plans for the Republican Party. I think it's safe to say that everyone in New Haven, no matter what their views are, liberal, conservative, in between, is hoping that you folks are successful in giving us a petition and alternative in a one-party city. So good luck with your efforts. Look forward to talking to you more. Good luck getting the Little League started. And I want to also thank our station manager, WNHH's Harry Droz, the miracle man behind the controls, who's taking us to the remote world of radio broadcast. We will repeat this broadcast several times in the next week. And thanks for listening, everyone. I think, if I'm not wrong, Harry's going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience, performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group scene, The Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us all day and all night at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio. Stay safe, everyone.